A letter from Sargon to the god Ashur sets out the victory against Urartu. The Assyrian army performed their usual engineering feats through the high mountains, the devastating annihilation of their enemies, although the king of Urartu escaped, but he did so having to ride a mare instead of a stallion, and this was considered sort of the next best thing to killing him because he suffered such humiliation that he had to ride a female horse. While the Urartians were destroyed, Sargon reports that only 5 members of his army were lost. The army and the captives came back to Assyria bearing hundreds of thousands of objects, Sargon reports in this letter, 1 ton of gold. In addition to this, silver, and Sargon notes that wine flowed like water. You might recall that the Assyrian kings were the ones who really promoted the idea of wine drinking as the ultimate in luxury. So this is one example of that attitude. After a decade of significant victories, in 710, Sargon led a stronger, more experienced army against Babylon and his rival there, Marduk-Apla-Iddina II. You do need to get a little bit attached to Marduk-Apla-Iddina II because he's going to come back in the reign of Sargon's successor. This time, Sargon drove him out and claimed the throne of Babylon, and Sargon was recognized as such for his entire reign. So this is one way that Sargon is trying to impose stability in Babylonia by naming himself king rather than allowing another king who proved to be disloyal to him to take the throne. Sargon spent the next 3 years in living in Babylon, carrying out repairs on temples and other public buildings, and participating in important religious festivals. These acts helped to spread support for Assyrian rule in Babylon, and it is remarkable that Sargon spent so much time and attention there. This illustrates the reverence that the Assyrians had for Babylonia as a religious and cultural center in Mesopotamia. Babylonia had been and would remain very difficult for the Assyrians to control. They had to be constantly vigilant for rebellions from the south, often supported by Elam or the marsh dwellers in southern Mesopotamia. This area is referred to in the inscriptions as the Sea Land, or even the tribes of the western desert. So Babylonia had many potential allies on which to draw, and this made them formidable opponents to the Assyrians. Unlike other trouble spots in the empire, Assyrian rulers were clearly reluctant to use the same devastating tactics that they had employed elsewhere. Why not simply transfer the people of Nippur or Babylon to the Egyptian border if they wanted to make sure that this area was secure? Scholars speculate that the Assyrians had a genuine respect for Babylonian tradition, their religion, their culture, their science, all of these topics that we've explored in previous lectures, and that this prevented most rulers from taking drastic steps to control the region. News of Sargon's victories encouraged most neighboring states to ally themselves to Assyria. Among them were rulers from the island of Cyprus and King Mita of Phrygia. No other king in the Near East could equal Sargon's power or wealth at this time. Sargon had begun work creating a new capital at Dur Sharrukin, which translates as Fort Sargon, or sometimes Sargon City, near modern Khorsabad in 717 BC. Moving it from Nimrud, where Assurnasirpal had first established his empire or his capital city. Sargon had used Nimrud as his capital early in his reign, but wanted a new city that would not be identified with his predecessors. It is possible that he was interested in a new capital because he had no family or political connections with the traditional Assyrian capital. Why be surrounded by images of predecessors to which you have no connection?